today is the sixth day, is etiquette within relationships, grihastas, sannyasis, godbrothers, gurus, common people, and members of other sampradayas. So I think I'll just skip it because it's not so important. I'll go over to the next one, which actually is very important. The seventh lesson is avoiding and rectifying Vaishnava aparas, how to speak to devotees and speak about them. So, the Vaishnavas are the persons, those who have surrendered themselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The people, those who have dedicated themselves completely in serving Vishnu, are called Vaishnavas. And the actual identity of a Vaishnava is that he is situated in his pure spiritual identity. A Vaishnava is free from all material attachments or material influences. Our identities have two sides, the spiritual side and the material side. The body, the gross body and the subtle body are the material side of our identity, and the spirit, soul, is the spiritual identity. The actual identity is the spirit soul. But in the material platform, we become influenced by the modes of material nature, and thus we develop these two bodies, subtle body made of mind, intelligence and false ego, and the gross body made of five different gross elements. And a Vaishnava is a person who is either totally free from these material influences of gross and subtle bodies, or who is trying to become free from these influences of gross and subtle bodies and be situated in his pure spiritual identity. And that identity is revealed, spiritual identity is revealed by establishing our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The more closely, more intimately we become related to Krishna, the more of a Vaishnava we become. The more more intimately we become connected to Krishna, the more we become free from the influence of the material nature. And a person who has become completely related to Krishna, fully related to Krishna, he is absolutely free from all material influences. So this person, Vaishnava, are very, very dear to Krishna. The devotees of Krishna, those who are with him, or those who are trying to go back to him, are very, very dear to him. So if anybody wants to go back to Krishna or develop Krishna consciousness, must guard himself, must protect himself against this, against committing any offense to the Vaishnavas. Now, to point out the position of a Vaishnava, how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is, Lord Shiva is telling, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhana Param. Of all the worships, the worship of Vishnu is the greatest. But Tashmat Paro Taram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. But even greater than worshipping Vishnu is the worship of the Vaishnavas. Tadiyanam. Tadiyanam means the ones, those who are his dear ones. Krishna's own people. Vaishnavas are Vishnu's own people, very dear ones. It's, the example can be given like if somebody is trying to please the father, then the easiest way to do it is by pleasing the son of the father. As I was mentioning also yesterday, it's very difficult to please a rich man because he has everything. But we can very easily please the son of the rich man by just giving him a bar of chocolate or a candy. The boy is happy just by getting a candy, and then he's so happy he goes to his father. The father, he gave me a candy. He's such a nice man. And the father immediately becomes favorably disposed to the man who pleased his son. So this is the easiest way to please Vishnu. So that's why it has been said that Aradhananam Sarvesham, of all the Aradhanas, of all the worships, Vishnu's worship is the greatest, but even greater than that is the worship of Vishnu's devotees. Now, if we reverse that point, it is easiest to please Krishna, it's very easy to please Krishna by pleasing his devotees. Now, if we offend Krishna's devotees, then we can well imagine what is going to happen. Like, if a person is very influential, very rich, and if somebody offends or does something to his son, what he will do? He will take it as a greater offense than the offense to himself. So that's why it is Vaishnava Apara that displeases Krishna the most. Now, who is a Vaishnava? Regarding that, there are some slokes in different scriptures. One is Chandalopi Munishreshto Vishnu Bhakti Parayanaha. Vishnu Bhakti Dihinastu Dijo Opi Sapachadhamaha. It is said, Chandalopi Munishreshto Vishnu Bhakti Parayanaha. If a Chandal becomes a devotee of Vishnu, then he becomes even greater than the Brahmanas, even greater than the greatest Brahmanas. Chandaloki Munishrishtu. Muni are the philosophically inclined position. And it's saying that a Chandal, if he becomes a devotee of Vishnu, then he becomes even greater than the Muni. That Vishnu Bhakti Vihinastu, but if a Brahmin is devoid of devotion to Vishnu, then he is even worse than a Chandal. So this way we can see that the position of a Vaishnava is the highest. And if somebody did not develop any love for Krishna, devotion for Krishna, then no matter how elevated he is, he becomes the lowest. Sometimes these Vedic quotes are very heavy. People cannot really tolerate that, especially the non-devotees. They cannot understand why Vedas are giving such heavy injunctions. But the point is, unless the statement is made in a heavy way, these fools won't be able to understand. It's kind of literally driving it through their head. Another sloka says, Vishnu Bhakti Vihina Je Chandala Parikirtita Chandalopi Vaishreshta Hari Bhakti Parayana. This also has the same meaning. If one is devoid of devotion, then he is considered to be a Chandal. But if one becomes a devotee of Hari, then although he may be born in a Chandala family, he becomes the greatest of all people. Then another shloka is saying, Name priyas chaturvedi madhaktra sapachak priya tasmai deyam tato grajham sacha pujya jatha aham. Name priya chaturvedi. Krishna is telling, Krishna is telling Uddhava in 11th canto, that Name priya chaturvedi. If somebody is an expert in all the four Vedas, if one has learned all the four Vedas, but is not a devotee of mine, he is not at all dear to me. But if somebody is born in a Chandala, dog eater's family, he becomes my dear one if he becomes my devotee, or when he becomes my devotee. And he says, he's instructing, Tasmai Deyam, offering should be made to him, his instructions should be taken from him, and he should be worshipped as I am worshipped. So this is how Krishna is establishing the very, very elevated position of a Vaishnava. Then another one is saying, Madhvakta yatra gacchanti, tatra gacchanti parthiva, bhaktanam anugacchanti muktaya shruti bhishaha. Krishna is telling, wherever my devotees go, my dear Arjuna, I also go there with them. Wherever my devotees are, I am always with them. And bhaktanam anugacchanti muktaya shruti bhishaha. And the liberation personified along with the Vedas follow the devotees wherever they go. Samite tishthati jasya hi anta kalyopi vaishnava gacchante paramam sthanam jadvati brahmaha bhavet. That is also a very nice shloka. It says, now what to talk about Vaishnavas becoming liberated themselves. You see, if at the time of somebody's death, if a Vaishnava is present, then even if the person is such a sinner that he killed a Brahmin or does the most abominable activities, even he goes back to Godhead. If Vaishnava is present at the time of death of somebody, then no matter how sinful that person is, he goes back to Vaikuntha. Gacchate paramam sthanam. Paramam sthanam means absolute position. So this is how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is. That just by being present at the time of death of a sinner, he can deliver him. Then from Bhagavad Gita says, Maam hi partha rakpa shrita jyopishu papo janaya Sriya Vaishyas Tatha Shudras Tepi Janti Parangatim. That Krishna, if somebody takes shelter of me, then it doesn't really matter if he is born in a sinful family or got a sinful birth, like women, Vaishya and Shudra, then he also attains the absolute position, parangatim. Also from Bhagavad Gita, says, Api chet sudhiracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak, sadhu reva samantabha, Sammak Bhagavata Shad. That if somebody is very, very obedient to Duracharo, Hajate Mam Ananya Bhag, Krishna is telling that if somebody serves me with unflinching faith and without deviation, then even if he becomes fallen, Shuduracharo, even if he becomes a miscreant, he should be considered to be a sadhu. He should be considered to be a great devotee, great person. Now from Srimad Bhagavatam, Naishang Mati, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Prahlad Maharaj is telling his father, Hiranyakashipu, Naishang Mati Stava Durukra Mangrim, Spreshatta Natha Pogamo Zadartha, Mahiyashang Pado Rajobhi Shekham, Nishkin Chananang Na Brinita Javad. That unless and until one is blessed by the dust of the lotus feet, unless and until one is coronated, abhishekam, or bathed by the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, nishkinchananam, a pure devotee of the Lord, no matter how much he studied the Vedas or how expert he is in performing austerities and observing vows, he cannot make any advancement. So this is how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is. So when a person becomes aware of the position of a Vaishnava, then automatically he guards himself against committing any offense. Actually, Vaishnava of apadans or offenses to the Vaishnavas are committed simply because they do not know the position of the Vaishnava, the elevated position of a Vaishnava. So when one recognizes the elevated position of a Vaishnava, then he automatically becomes careful not to commit any offense. There is some more that says, those who worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead but do not worship the devotees is not at all a devotee. He is simply puffed up. When a Vaishnava comes to the house, then he should be received by words like, today I have been blessed because the darshan of a Vaishnava is, because today I have got your darshan, and the darshan of a Vaishnava is as rare as getting the darshan of Vishnu. I must have acquired heaps of pious activities in the past. Then, if someone ill-treats a Vaishnava, then he loses all his piety. Actually, that's what happens when one mistreats a Vaishnava or offends a Vaishnava. Then he loses all his pious activities. And in the story of Ambarish Maharaj, Prabhupada pointed out that one has to be very, very careful not to commit offense to Vaishnavas, because Durvasa was a very great sage, but he offended a Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj. And although Vaishnavas don't take offense, but Krishna doesn't tolerate the offense to a Vaishnava. So, and because of Krishna's wrath, Krishna's anger, the offenders are destroyed. Generally, a Vaishnava doesn't take offense, but Krishna takes the offense. So that's why Vaishnava Aparad is so dangerous. And it has been said that if somebody commits a Vaishnava Aparad, then actually the door back to Vaikuntha becomes closed forever for him. So, one must be very, very careful not to commit offenses to Vaishnavas. And Also, it has been pointed out that when a Vaishnava is offended, not only he loses his good qualities, but if he is practicing devotional service, then he falls down from his devotional platform. And this is also a point to consider, that when the argument comes up, you know, how a living entity becomes envious of Krishna. If it is so wonderful to be with Krishna, then how does a living entity become envious to Krishna? The answer to that is, actually the living entity doesn't necessarily become directly offensive to Krishna in the spiritual sky. But they become offensive to a Vaishnava, Krishna's devotees. And if they become offensive to a Vaishnava, then he falls down. Because Krishna takes that offense very, very seriously. So the most often we also notice in our society, in the society of Vaishnavas, many devotees bloop, as we call it, or many devotees leave the movement. And actually the reason behind their fall down is their offense to Vaishnavas, their offenses to the Vaishnavas. So if one is serious about going back to Godhead, then he can be very, very, he should become very, very careful not to commit any offense to the Vaishnavas. And also we must be careful, because sometimes familiarity breeds contempt. And we think that, what's so big about, what's so great about him? He's not an advanced devotee. He's just a neophyte. And we tend to commit offenses, but we have to be very, very careful. But everybody should be treated rather carefully, because we do not really know how advanced one is. Because it's from outside, one cannot recognize a Vaishnava. Like we know the story of Jarabharat. Although he was a pure devotee, apparently he would look like a dumb fool. And so people are prone to make offenses to him. But actually he was a pure devotee. But from outside, we couldn't figure out who he was. Nobody could make out who he was or how elevated his position was. He looked more like a retarded person who couldn't think straight, who was stupid. But in the inside, he was a pure devotee. There are so many examples like that. We don't even have to go that far. Even in the recent past, we know the stories of different great Vaishnava acharyas, like Madhavendra Puri. If we saw Madhavendra Puri, apparently he would appear to be like a beggar to us. He didn't display any glamour whatsoever. He must have appeared to be like an ordinary beggar. But he is one of the greatest of all Vaishnavas of all times. His disciple was the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was such an elevated devotee that he would not even beg from houses. Even he would not beg for the sake of his food. But when he was like that, he was leading a life like that he would not beg, then Krishna came himself and gave him milk to drink. So we can well imagine how elevated his position is. Even in more recent past, we have seen that how Prabhupada was not recognized by the Vaishnavas around him, by the people around him. And I often feel that many of those people, though although they were situated in the Vaishnava platform, they could not really make any progress because of their offenses to Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee, an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, came to bless this world, but they, as I said, familiarity breeds contempt. They became contemptuous towards Prabhupada. And they offended Prabhupada. Although Prabhupada didn't take offense, but Krishna took offense. And that's why many of them lost their spiritual life, and many of them are just stagnating wherever they are. They are complaining to Prabhupada, they came challenging Prabhupada, why are you using the name Prabhupada? But they did not recognize that the work that Srila Prabhupada done, the greatest of all time, the work that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself did not accomplish, Prabhupada did it. I'm sure Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not hesitate to offer him the greatest glorification. But these people, they were challenging him. Why are you using the title Prabhupada? And anyway, so it is very good to be careful about dealing with the Vaishnavas. We should not think that they are ordinary people and just offend them even unknowingly. Even in our thoughts we should not offend our Vaishnavas. But at the same time, to be in a society, we do become familiar with each other. But in that familiar mood, we can have frank discussions and frank exchanges without any malice. Like, if we don't like somebody's behavior, we can go and tell him straightforward, in a straightforward way, that, Prabhu, why are you behaving like this? And especially the people, those who are in leadership or those who are in management, for the sake of the society, for the sake of Prabhupada's movement, sometimes they have to correct people. But that should be done with an attitude of service, not with a mood of enjoyment. We must understand that when we chastise somebody, we actually give him our sukriti. Our transcendental piety is transmitted to him. Actually, karma is very much like karma's movement of flow is like the movement of electricity or water. Water flows from high level to lower level. And if there is any contact between lower and higher levels of water, then there will be, the water will find its level, water will come to a level. The high water will give out, and the low water will rise, and then ultimately they will become equal. So when we deal with people favorably, when we are favorably connected to senior Vaishnavas, then we acquire their good qualities. But if we are unfavorably connected, then we lose our good qualities. Like if somebody unnecessarily criticizes or blasphemes, then actually all his piety is lost. Because he is actually making a contact between himself and that other person. And through that contact, he loses all the charges. Like electricity has this typical tendency that positively charged electricity, as soon as it comes in contact with earth, then it loses all the charge. It becomes neutralized. The same way, if somebody is unfavorably connected to a Vaishnava, that is because he offends him or blasphemes him, then he loses all his good qualities or pious activities. So that's why it has been described or it has been instructed that our behavior should be, we should always try to be connected to some senior Vaishnava. In Bhagavatam it says, what's the shlok? Shajati ashaya smidha sadhu sango tato bare. How one should associate, what kind of association one should seek? Shajatiya, it should be of the same kind. Like we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so our tendency should be to associate with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. That is the same family, Sajatiya, belonging to the same family. And Snigdha, that personality should be very peaceful, very composed, not agitating or agitated. Sajatiya Ashaya Snigdha, sadhu sangha, the association of the sadhus, sato bare, and he should be superior in his position. So that is what we must seek for. That's the kind of association everyone must seek in order to make advancement. So of course our society is a wonderful society. Here we have the most elevated Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada, in the center. And around Srila Prabhupada we have so many other wonderful Vaishnavas. And if we are favorably disposed, if we are favorably connected to them, then very easily we can go back to Godhead. But if we are not favorably disposed to them, then we won't last for very long. Like so many devotees have left the movement, and we cannot afford to be sentimental about it. And to be practical, the reason is they have offended the other Vaishnavas. And due to offense, they fell down. They lost their opportunity to remain in the platform of Vaishnavas. And it has also been said that the preliminary outcome of Vaishnava aparad is material opulence. When one offends Vaishnavas, the immediate thing that happens is that he gets a lot of material name and fame. And that actually secures the grip of Maya. And through that, Maya gradually grabs him. So, anyway, we should be very, very careful not to commit offenses. And when you speak to a Vaishnava, we should be very respectful. And when you speak about a Vaishnava, then also we should be very careful not to talk bad things behind the Vaishnava's back. So, I stop now. Thank you all very much. the subject that I was thinking of discussing today was how to offer prasadam and how to eat prasadam. It's actually, prasadam is a very important aspect of Krishna consciousness, because first of all, prasadam is the offerings to the Lord. Whatever food grains or foodstuffs we have or we prepare, we offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And then after it has been offered to Krishna, then we distribute the prasad, and after distributing, we take the prasad. That is the Vedic idea or Vedic custom. The householders used to prepare prasad, then offer it to Krishna, and after offering to Krishna, a householder used to go out of the house on the road, and he used to shout out loud, okay, the offering has been made in my house. If anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad in my house. So this is how the first would treat the guests. And Prabhupada said that in a society like that, there can never be any scarcity of food. No one will ever go hungry if we follow this system. And as far as the food is concerned, there is plenty of food all over the world. I remember when Prabhupada was in Australia, Prabhupada commented that this country, if it cultivates one third of its land, it can feed the whole world. America also is the same thing. I mean, so much food grain is just burnt or dumped in the ocean just in order to maintain the price structures. If there is too much production and if there is not enough buyer, then the price will drop of the products. So that's why they prefer to destroy the food than to let the hungry people of the world have it. And actually there is no scarcity of food in the world. Prabhupada gave some very nice examples. Prabhupada once commented that we notice that only in human society there is scarcity of food. In the other societies, there is no scarcity of food. Like in the elephant society, there is no scarcity of food. In the bird society, there is no scarcity of food. Even in the ant society, there is no scarcity of food. Everybody has, every living entity has been provided by Krishna. There's plenty for everyone to eat. But only in human society there is scarcity, because the human beings have created that artificial scarcity. How? Prabhupada said, by his greed. Like nature has given for everyone. Isha Varsham Idam Sarvam Jatkincha Jagat Tvang Jagat. Ishvara, Krishna, has given everything for everybody to survive nicely. And Krishna has given the quota for every single human being also. But the human beings are artificially stealing the food of other people. And that's why people are starving. Some people are starving in some countries.
regarding that, Prabhupada gives an example. You take a bag of rice and put it in the middle of the road at night. In the morning, some birds will come. They will eat as much as they need, then they'll fly away. Then some animals will come, like cows and goats. They also will eat as much as they need, and then they'll go away. But as soon as a human being comes, what he'll do? He'll pick up the whole bag of rice and walk away. So that's why there is scarcity in the human society. Human beings are not satisfied with what Krishna gave him, or nor do they have the faith that they will have the food for tomorrow. They're always concerned, what will happen to me tomorrow? What will happen to me day after tomorrow? What will happen to me 1 year from now? What will happen to me 100 years from now? What will happen to me 1,000 years from now? That's what he's always planning, and he's trying to accumulate for his security. One is security, another is greed. He's always trying to take away food and possessions of others. Human beings are actually the biggest thieves on the earth. So that's why there is scarcity. But in the Vedic society, there's no scarcity. That's why we see that in Vedic society there is no mention of, oh God, give us our daily bread. There's no such prayer in the Vedas. Why? Because in the Vedic society no one had to pray to Krishna for his food. In Bhagavad Gita, is there any mention of God give us our daily chapati sabji? No. Because there was never any scarcity. Of course, sometimes there was some famine, some scarcity. People did starve to death. But that was accepted as a natural calamity. When the people became very, very sinful, then due to their sinful activities, nature punished them by taking away their food. But otherwise, in Vedic society there was no scarcity of food, and that's why people used to cook a lot of prasad, offer it to Krishna, knowing that everything is coming from Krishna. They used to offer it to Krishna. And after offering, they would call out to people that, please come if you are hungry. Offering has been made in my house. And another thing to consider here is that those days the families in the world joined families. The families, the Vedic societies were not isolated husband-wives living together with their own children. Vedic societies used to be very big families, like especially people used to have many children, and then the brothers were automatically many, many brothers. They used to live together, and they had their children, so usually a middle order household used to have at least 30-40 members in the family. If you consider, if five brothers have, each one has five children, then 35 members, plus servants, and so on and so forth. In a family of 35 members, there would be at least 5 servants. So, 40 in a family. And the servants are considered to be the member of the family also. And when there is a big family like that, 40 members in a family, when you cook, you naturally cook for 50 people, right? So if there are 10 guests, then it doesn't really matter. We notice that in our temples also, like how we manage to feed so many people. Because our family in a temple, we have, say, 30 to 300 devotees. Some temples have about 30 and some temples even have 300 devotees. And when you cook for, say, 300 people, then you don't, when you cook for 300 people, automatically that food is sufficient for at least 350 people. So if 50 guests come, you don't really feel any difficulty in feeding them. So that is the advantage of collective living. But due to the influence of the age of Kali, in this age, people are becoming very, very quarrelsome. They cannot live unitedly. They cannot live collectively. So everyone is separating. Like I remember when I was a child, our family was a joint family, and there were about 20 members in the family. And my father's brothers were scattered around. I mean, they were six brothers. In that house, father's, three of them were living together. And three brothers were there, and others were away from home in the other cities in India. And it was very, very happy at most here. And then now in front of my eyes I have seen how families break down. Like they can't live together. Because living together means offering, sacrificing something. Like somebody will earn more, somebody will earn less. So a person who earns more, he'll have to take care of the person, those who are earning less. But in a joint family, that can is offered to the guests and children. First the children used to be fed, then the senior members, and then the ladies used to take the prasad. So guests and children used to be treated together, then the senior male members, and then the ladies. Because the ladies used to prepare the prasad and serve the prasad. So this is how the system was in the Vedic society. And actually, since we are following the Vedic culture, we should try to practice that as much as possible. As I mentioned the other day also, it's very important that you take care of our guests properly. And when it comes to taking prasad, we treat the guests very nicely, give them the best thing, make them really happy, and that will be the best preaching. If we take care of our guests nicely, then they'll go away with a very happy heart, and they'll feel very positive about our society, very favorable towards our society. Like last night, is Ramananda here? No. At about 1 o'clock, two girls and one boy ended up in the temple. They just walked in
and Ramananda was taking care of them. He was preaching to them, and I was amazed to see the potential of this country. Like, people are so nice, so receptive. And if you preach to them nicely, I'm sure hundreds and hundreds of people will at least become friends of Krishna. If they do not become full-time members, but at least they'll become friends of Krishna. I heard also that in Belgium, the family ties are very strong. So that's why it's difficult to make devotees. But still, if we preach nicely, Krishna will send. Krishna will even make the Belgian families sacrifice their children to Krishna. And that is actually the greatest sacrifice. And by the sacrifice we gain everything. We gain even our spirit soul. So, as far as the offering is concerned, like, we should be very careful that we do not offer first to Krishna in a casual way or in an unconcerned way. We must be very concerned when you are making the offering to Krishna. So when you are selecting the foodstuff and when we are preparing the food, we should be very careful that we are actually offering it to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the cooks have to be very, very careful when they're cooking. And their consciousness should be very pure at that time. They should not think of anything else but Krishna. How Krishna would like it. We must be very careful about that and very concerned about that. We can well imagine if we invite some important person in our house and we cook for him, how much care we take while cooking. We take a lot of care. So when we are trying to offer food to the most important person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can well imagine how careful we should actually be. And we must also understand that unless it's cooked properly, Krishna will not eat it, and then it won't become prasad. It will become our karma, and we have to eat that karma. If Krishna takes the food, then Krishna eats the karma and gives the food to us in the form of prasad. But if Krishna doesn't take the food, then it is gunjate te tabham papam. One who does not offer food to Krishna, then he simply eats his own sins. Bhunjate te tavam papam. So you should be very, very careful while cooking. And in a temple, usually, a person with most pure consciousness should eat. And I think in our temple, in this temple, we are very fortunate to have a cook like Parameshwar Prabhu, who is obviously a very, very nice devotee. From his, just by seeing him, one can make out that he is a very advanced devotee. So, a person who cooks must be very pure in his consciousness, and while he is cooking, he must meditate upon Krishna all the time, and Radharani also, because Radharani is the best cook. And when we cook, we must beg for Radharani's mercy, because if we receive Radharani's mercy, then we can cook nicely also. By her blessings, we can cook nicely. And the foodstuffs that we like, we give a lot of value ourselves, that must be cooked. Another thing also said in the Vedas, in Hari Bhakti Vilas, that the seasonal foods and the fruits and vegetables should be offered to Krishna. Like if something grows in summer, that should be offered to Krishna. If something grows in winter, during winter time, that should be given to Krishna. Of course, that applies mostly to India, in the West, where in winter practically nothing grows excepting bristle sprouts. It's difficult to offer seasonal fruits and vegetables to Krishna. And besides that, there is so much import of different fruits and vegetables from different parts of the world. So here it doesn't matter so much, but in India generally that should be maintained, that policy. Because different fruits and vegetables are actually gifts of nature. And nature actually provides us with different fruits and vegetables at different times of the year for certain specific purpose. Like, for instance, in India it is very hot, and at that time mangoes grow. In summer in India, mangoes grow. And mangoes are very cooling. Like if so when it is very hot and nature provides you with mangoes and you eat mango and you feel cool. So this is how nature is always taking care of us. And it is in the winter time, oranges grow. Of course, orange doesn't heat up your system, but it is a very good fruit for winter time when it's cold, because it has a lot of vitamin C, and it acts as a preventive to cough and cold. So very easily we can see how wonderfully nature has taken care of us. So the seasonal fruits and vegetables should be offered to Krishna, and after offering, after preparing the food, it must be offered to Krishna with a lot of love and devotion. So the person who is offering, the pujari, also should be very, very dedicated devotee. And then it should be served out, and we all, before taking prasad, we sing the prayer, Sharira Vidya Jal. Has it been translated into Dutch? Yeah. You say it in Dutch also? Yeah. Everybody knows the meaning? Does everybody know the meaning? I'm sure everybody knows the meaning. You don't know. Pandura. Anyway, you can get the translation. And this is actually a very nice approach to prasad, this prayer. We pray to Krishna that we remind ourselves before taking prasad that actually this body is a network of ignorance, because this body actually is tying us down to this material bondage. If we are not bound by this body, if we didn't have the demands of the body, if we are free from the demands of the body, then we would have been much better off. And that's why one takes sannyas. Sannyas means reducing the demands of the body and ultimately become free, totally free from all the demands of the body. Vasya vega, mano vega, krodha vega, jivha vega, udara vega, upastha vega. These urges are, the six different urges are begam. Begam means force. They are actually forcing, and these forces are products of the body. And a sannyasi's business is to control those six urges. And the best way to control those urges are by taking Krishna Prasad. Koribare jivha jaya. And out of all these senses, tongue is the most voracious, or tongue is the most, tongue's demand is most intense. Like we can control other demands, but the tongue's demand is very, very difficult to control. And so Krishna, in order to control, in order to help us control our senses, he gave us the prasad, Krishna prasad. Shat prasad, anna dilo bhai. And by taking that prasad, we can conquer our tongue. And when the tongue becomes conquered, then the rest of the senses become conquered also. All the other urges become conquered. When the tongue becomes conquered, then the other urges also become controlled. But if the tongue is uncontrolled, then through the tongue all the other senses go haywire. And Prabhupada said that they work in a line, tongue, belly and genitals. If the tongue is not controlled, then the belly will become agitated. And when the belly is agitated, then the sex desire will increase. So this is how, that's why it is very important for a devotee to try to control his tongue. But how do we control our tongues? By Krishna's mercy, we control our tongues just by taking Krishna prasad. And although Krishna prasad acts, Krishna prasad is very potent, because Krishna prasad is non-different from Krishna. So it is very potent, or rather, he is very potent. Now, even if we take Krishna prasad unknowingly or inattentively, still then it will act. It will purify us. But still it is better to meditate upon Krishna when we are taking Krishna's prasad. So with every single bite of Krishna prasad, we must meditate on how Krishna has tasted it. So this is how we become purified. Our purification becomes quicker by meditating on prasad, and we must taste how Krishna tasted it. And that's the best way to relish the prasad also. So that is how we should take Krishna prasad and get purified. And as far as serving prasad is concerned, in the Vedic society, actually, when the guests came to the house, the householder used to serve the guests. But the society in India, it has become so degraded nowadays. I remember that once I was invited to a life member's house, and this person was even initiated, and so he sat, first of all, he sat down with us, he gave prasadam in a table. Anyway, I thought it's all right, after all, the time is changing and people are gradually becoming westernized. So they're following the Western customs. Like, that's the difference between Vedic culture and Western culture. In the Vedic culture, when a guest used to come to the house, the best seat is offered to the guest. And guests used to get the best seat. Say, for, in a table, the guest, of course not the table, but generally they used to sit on the floor, and all, but at least the guests would get the most attention. But in the Western society, I remember what used to, when I was here as a Karmi, what used to appear to be very striking, one of the things was that the the house, the lord of the house used to sit on the head of the table. So that's the difference. Like here, what's the expression? What do you call the person who is the head of the family or head of the house? Anyway, you understand. The head of the house sits on the head of the table, and the guests are given the secondary seats. So that shows that Western culture is actually a very, very selfish culture. Whereas Vedic culture teaches us to become selfless. And unless and until we become selfless, we cannot make advancement spiritually. Anyway, so this man, he sat with us in the same table, and then when our plates were empty, then he stood up and with the same dirty hand he picked up the spoon and started to serve us. And that was enough for me. I couldn't eat anymore. Actually, I'm very sensitive about this, especially about cleanliness. And in the Vedic society, a person who is eating, he will never touch the food, like Prabhupada taught us. Like, yes, if you have to serve, then go wash your hands and then you serve. Even if you are taking prasad, and in the middle of taking prasad you have to serve. So that's why when you are taking prasad in a group, then somebody needs something, then somebody gets up, washes his hand and helps himself, and then he asks others, Prabhu, would you like to take some more? So this way you can see that how Prabhupada taught us the Vedic etiquette. Practically in every state, Prabhupada taught us the Vedic etiquette. But unfortunately in India, people are forgetting that. Now, devotees, when they take prasad, they should sit together and somebody should specifically serve them. One or two persons should be deputed to serve. And here, of course, I noticed that system is followed. In most of the temples, that system is followed. So So this is how prasadam is served. And of course, in the West it may not be practical, but generally in the Vedic society, the people used to sit on the floor and take prasad. And in Hari Bhakti Vilas it says that when your feet are touching the floor at the time of taking prasad, it is very healthy. It is very good for your digestion. And also in Vedic society, the prasadam is taken by hand, not by knives and forks and spoons. And when one takes prasad with hand, it's better because digestion actually begins by touching the food. Not even touching the food. Digestion actually begins, the process of digestion begins by seeing the food. When we see the food, by seeing, we begin to digest it. Digestion actually means accepting the food into the body as a part of the body. Now when we see, we grasp the food, and by that process of seeing, it begins to become a part of our body. Then we touch the food with our hands and feel it and mix it according to our taste. So that process is called apan. Apan means making one's own. And then we put it in our tongue, and then finally it goes to our stomach. And the more we have felt the food, the better it becomes for our digestion. So this is how generally prasadam should be offered, prasadam should be served, and prasadam should be taken. And also about taking prasad, it has been said that we should start taking prasad with liquid stuff, and then we should go to the solid, and then we should end it with liquid or light stuff. And Prabhupada says that it's better to drink water before eating, and that's the first class. And drinking water while eating is second class, and drinking water after eating is third class. And Ayurveda says that one shouldn't drink water within at least before 3 hours from eating. After we finish eating, within 3 hours we should not drink water. And if at all you have to drink something, then make sure that it is, hot. You can take some hot liquid, not cold liquid. So there are some very nice Ayurvedic injunctions about taking prasad. And also, it has been said that, of course, there are two systems. One is Bengali system, and the other is Gujarati system. In Bengali system, they start with bitter and then end with sweet. But the Gujarati system, they begin with sweet and end with bitter. So, anyway, that of course will depend on individual's taste. But I think it's more, naturally more palatable to start with bitter and end with sweet. Prabhupada used to say about Krishna consciousness, it is bitter in the beginning, and sweet at the end. But materialistic life is sweet in the beginning and bitter at the end. So, I think that's the proof that Bengali culture is more spiritual.